Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program. We come your way every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also provide you with a link to our guests' websites or information that is pertinent to the conversation at hand. And we encourage you to check out their websites and see what they have to offer. I think that you will be not just amazed, but I think it'll maybe excite you. If you find something that resonates with you, hey, go for it. We'd love for you to check that out and check them out and know what they're dealing with. Today we're going to be it's sort of a roundabout way of talking about one of my favorite subjects, transitioning or death and dying, in a manner of speaking. And it's a number of other subjects as well. I will guarantee you that. We're going to be talking with our guest, Susan Allison, PhD, and she has a book called You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, How to Find Guidance and Healing in the Spirit Realm. And Susan, welcome to our program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here.
Coming to us via Skype, and we're talking about a very interesting subject in that respect, that it used to be that I used to hear the phrase that once you have acquired or accumulated all of the answers to all of your questions, you then left. You didn't need to be here anymore. Then it was that when your work was completed. Well, how do we know when our work is completed? Not until we transition. And sometimes we're always asking these questions, and I've been faced with the dilemma of being hit with, why don't you leave some of those questions unanswered until the next life, whether it be the spirit world or I come back reincarnated as. We're always looking for that guidance, and I know that you're going to tell us where to go to find that guidance. We're going to talk about that as well, specifically the spirit realm, certainly. But I'm wanting to let our listeners know also, before we go too much further, that drsusanallison.com is the website, drsusanallison.com. And that is the website where you can find out all of the good information that she has to offer. And I'm going to start at the beginning by going to page 210 and saying, the end is not the end. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I've found over 22 years of doing shamanic journey work and going to all these realms, and particularly after my husband's transition in 2013 and journeying every day to what I call a level of heaven, and I'll explain that as we go, but really, it's not the end. It's you know, if you've been growing here, Richard, which I know you have been, you continue to grow there. We shed this skin, much like a snake sheds its skin. We shed this body. We shed this physical casing that we carry. But we have, as quantum physicists would say, we have energy. Or as someone who believes in has a spiritual practice, we have a spirit. But we continue to transition, to grow, to look at ourselves, to evolve there. So the end is not the end. It's, you know, when we cast off this, you know, this mortal coil, we continue to grow as an energy being, as a spirit, as an essence, as, for instance, your essence of who you are, Richard, the deeper part of who you are, that involves your heart, involves your spirit, involves your, I don't know if I want to use the word personality, but it involves your character, it involves who you are, that's not your skin. And I have seen it over and over, probably, I think I figured out yesterday, 1,100 or so journeys that I've done since 1993. I know without a doubt, by direct experience, that we are immortal.
Now, when you use the term immortal, it conjures up all kinds of things in people's minds. And we're not, as you, I think, clearly stated, the physical body is not the immortal part.
No.
And if I were to dive into some of the ancient wisdom teachings that have been left for us down through the centuries, there is one in particular that I think of, especially growing up here in the West in the United States, and of course with the Christian tradition, where I believe it was Paul the Apostle who made the comment, you know, do not fear the one who can destroy the body, but who can destroy the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that implies that the body's irrelevant in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of the fact that I have to say that as of our conversation here, I was going through the list of appointments to my doctor over this 2015 year that we just had go by.
Yes.
And I went 10 times, mm-hmm. which I'm sure is up from from the year before and the year before that. And it's like,
yes,
I find myself spending more time here and I'm not real happy about that. And yet we do have to take care of the physical body.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, well, okay, on the one hand, the soul will then, our soul, our essence, you know, if you will, the heart energy, however you want to phrase it, moves on to the next level. But that doesn't necessarily mean that our work is done. And I think that's the struggle that we have. I mean, I'm only 55. I'll be 56 mm-hmm. this year. And,
yeah.
you know, and I'm supposed to outlive my great-grandmother who lived to be 100. And when she was in her 90s and I was saying this, I was also saying that she's making it real hard because she kept going on and on and on.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to be in a chair or in a bed somewhere for the last 10 or 15 or 20 years of my life. I want to be vibrant and moving and active and
yep.
doing all of these things. Yet at the same time, and this I think is a struggle for all of us, I have to make peace with that aspect that says, okay, yes, that's what I want as far as my physical body, but I have to remind myself that's not the relevant part.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would use the word relevant because I think both are important. And one discovery I've made over these 22 years of doing this work is that it is important to be here. It is important to treat our body as a temple of our spirit. It is important to live here and live our soul's purpose and fulfill it. And in terms of my own belief in my own life, do service here, do something that is helpful to others and to the planet. So one thing I love about shamanic work is that once you do this work and you prove to yourself personally that there are spirit worlds, that there are helpers and guides and teachers and allies and angels and ancestors and departed loved ones who love you and who have been assigned to you. Once you know that, Richard, you actually can live more fully here, because so many people fear death in our culture. So many people are focused so much on the future and their fear of what's going to happen to them that they don't live now. And so this is what this has done for me and a lot of my clients and readers, is that they can take a deep breath and say, wow, I am not afraid. I know that it's okay. And I know my loved ones are fine. I no longer fear death. It's time to live fully here. Yes, take care of my body, not be obsessed with it, as some people are, not obsessed, but healthy. And able to really be vibrant and live fully. And I think that a balance is needed. And it's one reason I have some argument with some teachings, and it's particularly in Christianity, that all that's important is heaven. You know, that this isn't mm-hmm. important, that the body isn't important, being here isn't important, because I think that devalues our purpose and why it is that you're still here, Richard, that I'm still here. We still have work to do. Mm-hmm. There's still something we're supposed to be doing here, and that is why we are still here.
You know, I've been watching every so often. I'll leave the room, and my wife will click into Netflix, and she'll just pull out a film, and I don't know what intrigues her by it, but, you know, she puts it on, and it happens to have a really strong Christian orientation to it. And I was watching one regarding the rapture and the aftermath thereof and so forth. And I was working for 15 years in my career, early in my career, for a Christian radio station. And I was hearing this message all the time about the rapture, the end of the world, end times, Armageddon, Judgment Day, all those things, right? And I was there for about, I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 9 years. And I was really kind of getting bored with that story. Like, you know, come up with another story. This is really, you know, I'm tired of this. I'm not afraid of it. I'm just tired of it. So I asked somebody, I said, is there any way that I could participate in some activity that would help to bring about all of this stuff you're talking about so we can move on to something else? Okay. And I watch, and this, here's the other aspect of it too. Those who believe in the prophecies pray and fight against those prophecies. For example, we hear about the stories, you know, in terms of Israel's major role in all of this. And here we are in the 20th, 21st century, and all of these different things have come up. And I heard over that 15-year period of time, okay, this is the event that's going to usher in. And then that would pass. And no, this is the event that will usher, you know, and I'm going, really? You don't know? So be quiet. Yeah. But what strikes me so interestingly is that those interpretations of prophecy claim that, you know, these things are going to happen. So why should – it kind of goes to the same thing. How can I help to precipitate this process? How can you fight against something that is going to be? In other words, it's predestined. Now, when we talk about our lives as individuals, you and I, we don't know what our destination is in terms of – our physical life's path to the end where we transition.
Right. You know, I just had I have my own radio show. It's on transformationtalkradio.com. It's called We Carry the Light, every Thursday live at 10 a.m. Pacific. And I was just talking, in fact, two guests in a row, talking about believing that we have an expiration date. And that it's a very interesting topic. And the idea that there is an expiration date, that we have a time when it's going to be our time. And Native Americans have been talking about this for some time, that they actually can feel it when it has come. Mm-hmm. And they can sit there and say, it's going to be today or tomorrow or tonight. And I feel like I've let go. I can't predict it. I have no idea. But in the meantime, I need to be my highest. I need to keep evolving. I know what my soul's purpose is on the planet. I need to keep doing it. And, you know, at times, Richard, I haven't wanted to, you know, especially after my husband's death in 2013, I would do some journey work. I would go into trance, close my eyes, and I would find myself in these realms where I go. It's like a meditation for listeners. It's a very relaxed state. And I would find myself in these places, and I have guides and teachers, and I would say, I want to be here. I want to be, I mean, the level of heaven where I go, it's luminous. It's like, you know, Eben Alexander, describes in Proof of Heaven, all these people describe who have had near-death experience. It's what I found. It's incredible. It's luminous. It's full of love. It's peaceful. It's incredibly beautiful. And I remember saying, I want to be here. I don't want to be in my life anymore. I don't want to be on earth. I'm sick of it. It's a lot of work. It's pain. I'm in grief. I want to be here in heaven. And the message I got over and over, it is not your time. I mean, I got it over and over from different beings. It's not your time. And I was not happy with that at first, especially when I was really missing my husband. But, you know, two and a half years later now, I know they're right, that I still needed to do this book. I needed to help people overcome the fear of death. I needed to be this light being, this light worker that I am. I need to be out there. I need to be helping people. I'm still here. But I have to tell you that once I was there, I being here didn't look quite as good to me at the time.
You know, I had a guest on not too long ago. We actually talked about this very thing. And basically, when we come into this world, we have a round trip ticket. We just don't know when the departure is.
Exactly.
And I guess that's one of the reasons why I know that there are a lot of people who are very concerned about current events and the things that are going on and the conflicts and the agitation that's out there and so on and so forth. I could be more specific, but I know you know what I'm talking about.
I sure do.
And I have to tell you that none of that concerns me. I'm not afraid.
Me either.
If I had been in this particular location and this particular event had happened and I'd been at ground zero, guess where I'd be right now? I'd be elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I'm not going to sit here and draw to me that kind of event by virtue of having that kind of energy of fear and angst and anxiety and dwelling on it. I mean,
yeah.
I know there are people who say, well, I'm not afraid. Yeah, but you're watching that stuff the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
wouldn't I'm sure that you took history courses in school, both mm-hmm. high school and college, right?
Yes.
And you've seen man's inhumanity to man down through the centuries, right? And it hasn't changed to this day. We would like to hope that it would, but it hasn't changed. So if we already know that these events happen and have been happening over the centuries, the names have changed, the locations, the particular thing, but it's still man's inhumanity to man. I already know that's going on. I'm not denying it. I'm just not filling my head and my heart with it.
You're not participating in it. And I agree with you 100%. I don't watch the news. I barely read the newspaper. And I am not apologizing for that. I feel that what happens is that we are absolutely filled with fear.
Yeah.
And it makes us immobile. And I feel that if each of us, and it doesn't mean that I'm not aware of world events, because I am. I keep in touch. It just comes at me on the internet, et cetera.
Yeah.
But I am not going to be mired in it, because I have work to do here. And I think if we could each find what our purpose is, we can each figure out, why am I here? What is it I'm meant to do? And until I have that round, trip ticket home. I have work to do. And what happens is we get filled with fear and we become immobile, and then we do nothing, and we are unhappy in the process and are in this state of almost, suspended animation. We're just sort of glued, in place. And the other thing, I want to put a word out for a colleague of mine and her book, Eleanor LeCain, who lives in Washington, D.C., has a book out. In fact, you should have her on your show, and it's called Breakthrough Solutions. She has interviewed all of these people around the world who have amazing solutions to our world's problems. And I mean, we're talking about poverty and hunger and unemployment and the environment, global warming, you name it, political issues that we're going through, the bank collapse, whatever you want to mention is in mm-hmm. the book. And she's been on my radio show a couple of times, but she really says the media is the problem, that the media, and they've tried to put positive news stories on and people don't listen to them or watch them. And the media is behind in this consciousness raising period that we're in, because they keep causing separation. They mm-hmm. keep sort of creating more fear. And that means that we separate from people in the rest of the world and their enemies. And we do this whole thing that's very dangerous. But her book is amazing, because she actually has found all of these institutes, all of these businesses, these organizations that are changing the planet, changing our world, creating new forms of energy, et cetera. And they're not out there. We don't see them in the New York Times. We don't see them in the LA newspapers. We just are not ahead of the game in terms of our media. If we can get the media on board, the world could change for the better in terms of consciousness raising and seeing that we are progressing as a humanity.
Mm.
That's my rant right now.
Well, and to add to that rant, I've posed this question, and maybe it's a facetious question, but at the same time, mm-hmm. I kind of feel it's a serious one as well, that the question is, has man earned the right? Does he deserve to continue on as a species because of the way in which he has treated his fellow human beings over the centuries? Mm-hmm. It's like, where are we today that I mean, are we any further along today than we were 100 years ago in terms of this whole drama of conflict? And my observation is, no, we haven't advanced. Mm-hmm. If anything, we've gone backwards.
You know, I actually feel a little different. And that's because I feel that we're at a tipping point. And okay. A lot of writers, there's an organization called Choice Point. There are a lot of writers, Barbara Marx Hubbard being one of them.
Yes, a local Santa Barbara.
Barbara Marx Hubbard's been on my radio show several times. And I love her focus on conscious evolution, that this is the first time in human history that we have a choice, that we are able to consciously evolve. It hasn't been a choice in the past, but suddenly, you know, we have the ability to choose a direction and to go in that direction. I do believe that there's still time. Some writers, Lynn Twist for one, Lynn Twist says, you know, maybe we have, well, she has given us like 4 years or something. I think the people at Choice Point say we have 30 years in terms of the environment, in terms of global warming, in terms of the ice caps melting, et cetera, islands disappearing because of the rise in the water level on the island. But they're saying, hey, and my friend Eleanor LeCain in her Breakthrough Solutions book are saying, we have these choices. It's whether we choose them. It's whether we decide that we're going to focus on what can be done rather than throwing up our hands, sitting back and saying the world is ending. I feel like that we have a choice, but we are at the tipping point.
We're talking with Susan Allison, and she is the author of one book anyway that we're discussing here, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven. When we come back, I want to talk about heaven. And this is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. I'm joined today by Susan Allison, and she is the author of one work in particular, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven. And Susan, let me ask you, in terms of this whole business of finding guidance in the spirit realm we'll get into, but what is heaven in this context?
You know, it's interesting. I was raised in a very Christian family. In fact, I was going to mention this earlier because of your story about everybody saying the world is ending, and you know, it's the rapture, the apocalypse, and so on. And I want to just quickly say that, and then I'll get into what we're talking about. I went to church camp every summer as a Christian youth, and one morning, I guess it was the middle of the night, probably about 2 a.m., the counselors woke us up and told us the world was ending and marched us in our pajamas to the chapel. We were barefooted. I can still remember the pine needles underneath my feet. We get to the chapel, and we were told to come up and take Jesus as our Savior, or basically the world was ending and we would go to hell. Now, this was what I call spiritual abuse. It caused me to leave the church for many, many, many years. And I only came back during a shamanic journey that I took, where I ended up on Calvary Hill at a time when Jesus was about to be crucified. And Jesus walked up to me during the journey, during the trance, when I was in this meditative state, and told me that our family would be some of the first followers of his teachings. And I had that experience, and I realized I didn't have a quarrel with Jesus. I had a quarrel with what people did with Jesus in the church and the kind of people that were in my church. But I was always raised with a belief in heaven. And as a child, I really had a very I had a psychic ability. I had a healing ability in my hands. I remember being at the top of my pepper tree and talking to angels, and telling my mother that I had flown with angels over the house. And my mother sort of, you know, humored me. She patted me on the head and said, "That's nice, dear." And I know she thought that they were imaginary friends, but they really were angels that I was talking to. So I always had this connection to angels and a belief in heaven. I always have, and a belief in God that didn't leave me even after the spiritual abuse experience. So what has happened since I have been journeying since 1993 is that I have been there. I have been to what I call a level of heaven, Richard, that's not the heaven we can go to after we die. I have actually seen that by looking up at the place where I can go. I looked up at one journey and saw a golden city full of light with, it looked like crystals and prisms and light dancing off of what seemed like mirrors or windows. It was incredible. And I've been able to sort of fly up and look at it during my journey, but never have been able to go in. And it's my belief that that is a higher level that only people who are not embodied can go to. After that journey, I did research and I read in Revelation, a passage that I included in my book, that says that there is a golden city that look, you know, basically says full of light. It looks as if it's made from crystal. That is exactly what I saw above me. And I call the place I could go a level of heaven, because what I've experienced is that there are many, many, many levels. In the Bible, it says, in my Father's house are many mansions. And I believe that that's referring to all the different levels and where you are when you begin. And then you can, you move up, you move towards the light, you work on your issues there like we do here, and you keep moving. And that has been my experience of what I call a level of heaven that I can go to. But Richard, if you did this work, it would appear differently for you. It would be the heaven you need, or the paradise, and in shamanism they call it the upper world. It would be the upper world for you, and the beings would be there that love you and are there to be your guides and teachers, and your ancestors would show up, your departed loved ones, whether a beloved grandmother or grandfather or someone that has departed, would show up for you. And that's what's great about shamanism, just briefly. It is independent investigation of truth. It is your truth. You go, you experience it, you have your own experience of the divine, and then you bring that back and you believe it because you have experienced it.
Tell me how transpersonal therapy that you conduct in your practice and have for over 20 years, how does that correlate, if you will, to shamanism?
Yeah, it's a part. Shamanism is a part of transpersonal psychology. It's sort of, if you imagine that a psychologist has a tool bag, I have a tool bag that I use, and I pull out of it whatever it is my client needs. And for instance, I use hypnosis. I use shamanic journey work. I use process therapy. I pull out. I use energy medicine, Reiki, and the reconnection that I can do. So I pull out whatever it is the client needs. And more in my practice, I'm using shamanic work, which means, in fact, if your readers, for instance, if, I mean, listeners are needing physical help, or they're ill, or they're in some way needing help, they have an illness, they have they've been in an accident, they could read my book, Empowered Healer, because I go into the different steps that I use that are part of transpersonal psychology. I talk about it in that book. But I would have a client, let's say a client comes to me that has cancer, and I have had many, many people come to me with various forms of cancer. The person, in fact, I had somebody that it's chronicled in my Empowered Healer book who had cervical cancer, and I would have her close her eyes. I would take her into a trance, just using my voice, having her relax completely. And then I would have her journey inside her own body. And she would, this person in particular, journeyed down into her body, in where her cervix was. And a doctor had said that she was fairly certain that she had cancer. She didn't have the test back yet, but the doctor was fairly certain by what she saw. So we did work for weeks, maybe months, and she found out what was causing it, that there was actually a life issue, an unresolved life issue tied to this, and that once she resolved it, it completely went away. And I think it's been at least 15 years. She lives on another coast. She lives, I believe, in New York State, and is cancer-free after doing that work. So that's basically the kind of work that I do in my practice. But I also use cognitive therapy, behavioral therapy if people need it. But I believe more in deeper therapy where people journey inside. They go into a deeper trance state and they really get to the root of what's causing their issues.
The thought that just came to me, question for you, as I'm sure you access your intuition on a regular basis, I don't know if you receive messages, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this whole aspect of cancer, and again, it encompasses so much, and I have to wonder if that's the name that we put on it in the 20th century, but that these conditions actually existed centuries before, and they called them something else. That was one of the things that I thought of. But what is this all about in our lifetime, in this time, in our world's existence?
Well, I mean, we could talk. In fact, I'd be happy to be back on your show another time and we could talk about that for hours.
Sure.
My Empowered Healer book, for instance, and going through my husband's illness and what I learned and what I found and what I use in my practice to help people heal is a huge topic. But I believe there's so many components. I do believe that our environment our environment is affecting us deeply. We have huge mercury levels in our air. Here where I live on the California coast, we have just found huge high mercury levels in our fog. Now that has to be affecting our health. It's affecting the mountain lions. They've been doing research on the mountain lions in this area. They have high mercury levels that they've been finding in them. And our environment is poisoned. Our oceans are poisoned. So obviously that is affecting us and it's causing cancer. It's causing other illnesses. I also do, because I'm a psychologist, I also really believe in the psychological aspects mind-body medicine, how the mind affects the body, how the spirit affects the body, how anything that's unhealed in us, anything that's unresolved, whether it's from childhood, it's from a difficult divorce, it's from being abandoned at some point, all of that works, I believe, to create dis-ease in our bodies. Mm-hmm. And I have seen so many people heal in my practice from getting to the root of the cause of it, why the cancer has come, why the chronic pneumonia has come, or the fibromyalgia, or whatever it is that the person that's showing up. It's mm-hmm. It's like the tip of the iceberg. It's what's showing above the water. Well, what's going on underneath the water? What are the issues that are driving it? And so I have seen people heal. I also have seen people get cancer from environmental toxins, etc. So, the food we eat, our lack of exercise, our lack of forgiveness for ourselves. Cancer, in fact, Dr. Bernie Siegel, I just love him. He is still going strong.
Mm-hmm.
Fabulous man, just came out with a new book. He believes in the psychological factor. He sees it over and over in his cancer patients, that it's often to do with a lack of self-love. It's to do with putting everyone else first and not really fully embracing and loving ourselves and forgiving ourselves and seeing that we can make mistakes and that we're human and to love ourselves anyway. I know that he has seen that a lot in his cancer patients, and so have I.
One of the thoughts that I've brought this to the program a number of times with people that, science has shown that everything is just energy.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were sharing, I thought, well, if we could all just come to the awareness and the realization that that is true, then these things wouldn't harm us. But because we have forgotten who we are and where we come from and where we're going,
right?
These things harm us. And so just because everything is energy doesn't mean that I can eat anything I want and it'll be okay. Then the other aspect of it too is, and you alluded to this, and I'm sure that you could even speak on this, there are individuals who are very, very obese, and they've put on layer after layer of, in essence, fat as a protection because they have been wounded at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
And that in one sense, once they have dealt with that, as you say, once you have healed, you have forgiven, you've gone through that process, it's entirely possible that all of that will just start to drop away. You still have to do the work, but I'm just saying that you don't need it anymore.
No.
And then you begin to realize, oh, I don't need this protection anymore.
No, you're so right. And we could do a whole show on that. It's huge. In fact, in my internship, I worked mainly with people who had eating disorders and compulsive overeating, anorexia, and bulimia. And I found it over and over that it's tied to protection. It's tied to being able to create a boundary, that you're creating the boundary with your body, as you said. And the other thing that, you know, and this is in research as well, but I did see it literally, is if there's been sexual abuse, it's huge. And, you know, I don't know the percentage anymore, but it's a huge percentage of people who have been violated in some way, physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually, mainly sexually, sexual abuse, but there's a huge link between that and eating disorders. That it's, and it also is shame. It's like trying to shove down the shame with food, and trying to shove down the emotions. A lot of people who have food issues, it's the food, it's comfort, and it also is a way to keep the anger from coming up. It literally is a device where you push it all down. You push it, but the anger then has to go somewhere, which can create other illnesses. The sadness has to go somewhere in the body. It is in the lungs, or it's gone into the stomach, or so we've shoved it somewhere. And the food is, you know, it's just a panacea. It's a Band-Aid, and it's a coping mechanism. And you know, and bless everyone's hearts. All the listeners who have had food issues, I've had them myself, people who have, you know, drug and alcohol issues, same thing in terms of being a coping mechanism, that, you know, people are just trying to survive the way, you know, the best they can, and they have found this coping mechanism, unfortunately, that's harming them in the process.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting to talk about the whole aspect of bringing the body back to a state of ease as opposed to dis-ease. You know, we call it healing and so forth. And it is, on the one hand, kind of complicated, but when you look at it a little further, it really isn't that complicated. At least as we've talked here thus far, you know, we've talked about all of the various causal agents, if you will. But it really comes down to, what if at the moment of those respective, and I'll call them the traumas, that we took on a totally different perspective? And I'll give you a real brief case in point. I had an experience with a general manager of a station back in the late 80s. And he came at me, and I mean, he was just fit to be tied. And I couldn't sleep for 3 days. And finally, we sat down and talked, and, you know, we got everything worked out, and everything was fine. Well, in 2005, a similar thing happened with a different manager, but the same manager that I had dealt with back in the 80s was in the room, strangely enough, with us. And this other manager went off on me, and all I could do was sit there and keep myself from laughing, because I knew, A, that his rant was irrelevant because I hadn't done anything wrong, but he wasn't going to hear that, and that I also felt good because the other manager was in the room from the previous incident, And here I was having the same kind of thing happen, and he's sitting there, and I'm not playing the game.
No.
And I felt really, really very good about that.
Yeah.
And so my, it took, maybe 15 years to get 20 years to get to that point. But by the same token, I had a different perspective in the same kind of environment.
Yep.
But with a whole different result. I was able to sleep that night and every night after.
Awesome. Good job.
So if we change our perspective, can, before those traumas hit, if there's a, and I know there's no one affirmation or prayer or thing that we can do for every single issue or situation. But if there were something that, at least we could start taking a look at it and saying, okay, I'm going into this dark tunnel here. There is a light at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I need to look at this not as a scary thing, but as an adventure. What will I find? What's going to be inside this tunnel? Could be really interesting. Could be kind of fun. Maybe I'll learn something. Maybe I'll meet somebody that can help me, that whatever the case might be. I mean, in other words, just changing... Yeah. Changing our perception.
Great, great story. And I really like that. Basically, one of my tenets is that attitude is everything and it affects everything. And the work that you did on yourself in those 20 years or so really showed. And you didn't take it personally anymore. And I often send my clients off with a phrase that they are saying over and over to themselves, which is, this isn't about me. And I feel that so much of the time we think everything is about us, and it isn't. Your manager might have been having a bad day. There were other things going on. You sort of got the brunt of it. And I feel that so much of the time, if we can keep that perspective and keep our attitude, I mean, it's the work we do inside us, right?
Mm-hmm.
The work that we do on ourselves, where we know, like you said, I hadn't done anything wrong. And you know that, and you know that you were doing your best, and you felt like even laughing the second time it happened, because you'd been there, done that, and you could really see the game, and you weren't going to play, and you also had higher self-esteem, and it's being human, it's like I had a teacher once who said this is spiritual graduate school, and I do feel that there's so much work that we do on ourselves and so much learning and just shifting our perspective like you did, shifting it, made all the difference in your life in terms of your peace, that you could sleep that night. And, but being human, being here on the planet, a lot of the time, for me at least, it's work. It's really a lot of spiritual work.
Yeah.
It's on a daily basis.
And one of the other things that also it was shared with me, and it's kind of helped me with the, I don't want to say road rage, but obviously the frustrations that we all get when we're driving.
Yeah.
And I think, and I hadn't even thought about this until this person brought this to my attention. And they said, that guy that you just got upset with who, did whatever he did not get up this morning saying, we're going to get Richard. Okay, we're going to find him and we're going to really just rattle his we're going after him. None of these people who are out there on the road got up that morning and said, we're going to get so-and-so.
Nope.
This is not a conspiracy.
It is not.
It's a lack of awareness on their part of really what they're doing and their surroundings. And we all do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that you and I both can admit to the fact that as we've been driving on one occasion or maybe one or more, we've actually, don't tell anybody, we've blown through a stop sign.
Imagine that.
Okay. And thank God nobody else was coming.
Right.
But it happens.
Right.
And
we've made mistakes.
Yeah.
We've made mistakes. They're making mistakes. I think it's about being human. And, mm-hmm. You were telling me that you were laughing when that manager did that the second time.
Yeah.
I have been laughing when I've been on the road lately, especially during the holidays when people, it seems like that they're absolutely nuts. And so I have been able to lately just sort of just shake my head and laugh that humanity is nuts during this 2-week period. It's helped me actually.
Well, I think that it's a very important thing for each of us to remember that the other yeah. people are not out to get you.
No, they're not.
They're really not. Now, when we talk about when you talk about how to find guidance and healing in the spirit realm, help us define some terms again. What is the spirit realm?
Well, we're going back 60,000 years to the beginning of shamanism. It predates all major religions, and I believe is the first religion is shamanism, and it's ancient. And the worlds that they described, that shamans could listen to a drum or rattle and they could go into trance and journey to these worlds, they saw them as three worlds. There's a lower world, a middle world, and an upper world. And in my book, I start, and we're talking about you don't have to die to go to heaven. In chapter one, I call it the middle world, personal place of power. And I start there because it's a great place to begin. It's like an airport or a subway station where you can start there and you could go up to the upper world from there or down to the lower world. And basically, they have different attributes. The lower world is a place where you mainly find animal spirits. These are spirit worlds. These are other dimensions of reality. And they are somewhat like this world we live in and somewhat not. The lower world is very primeval. It's very primal, ancient. Mine looks like the Grand Canyon, even though I've never, ever been there. First time I went, it has red walls and rock canyons and a river and sort of deserty looking trees, and animals are there, and you can find animal totems, power animals, some people call them, and I call them animal helpers. So you go to that world and you invite in an animal helper to assist you in your life. And for me, it's been about polishing my rough edges, becoming a better person, letting go of my arrogance, for instance, my judgment. And I have had a certain power animal, and I do say it in the book, so I'll mention that I have an eagle and I have a swan mainly now, but I've had a bear and a cougar and an owl. And so these animals become sometimes our teachers, but definitely they're helping us become better people, helping us with our lives here. The middle world is more like the dreamscape when you're dreaming, and it is your personal place of power, and yours, Richard, would look different from mine. Whatever, you know, you find yourself on a path, you set an intention with every journey. I'm setting an intention to go to my middle world. And then I invite in beings who love me. And that is an amazing world because a departed loved one can show up there. I've had my grandmother I never have met who came. I had Lao Tzu, the founder of Taoism, show up there. I also had a winged snake, not like a dragon, but sort of a winged snake that you can see in various mythologies. So the middle world is a world where you have teachers, guides, helpers, ancestors who are trying to help you in your life here. It's amazing. The upper world is more luminous. It's the stereotypical sort of description that we have of heaven. It really does look like that. It's very light filled. Mine is a beach. I have a classical Greek temple. I have a soul family there, divine teachers. I see my departed husband in that realm. And so these are the worlds. These are the spirit realms that have been described for tens of thousands of years in indigenous tribes.
Hmm. I mean, we've talked about shamanism on this program before. I've always been quite intrigued by it.
Yeah.
And I know that it is part of the culture and the lifestyle of many civilizations down through the centuries.
That's right.
Maybe less so in this century, at least maybe from my awareness anyway. I don't know how much it permeates the peoples of the planet, as far as some of the other, you know, indigenous tribes of, say, mm-hmm. Central or South America and Africa. I mean, those are the only mm-hmm. two areas, and then possibly some very remote areas, maybe in Asia.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Because the Western lifestyle is, it's like every time I hear the phrase that we're going to export democracy or capitalism, I cringe mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I see where we are and I'm yeah. going, don't do that to them. That's not nice.
You know? No, you know? Well, no, it isn't. And it's, you know, I would say that there are still a lot of indigenous peoples practicing shamanic work, and definitely in our Native American culture here in this country, there are still shamans,
yeah.
and they're still doing shamanic practices in their tribes. Even if they're on a reservation, they're still practicing, and particularly bringing back the tribal languages more now, bringing back more customs, and with pride, identifying with the culture. And I know I really resonate with Siberian shamanism, and it's just fascinating to me. And I quote a couple of books in my book, a couple of authors that have done a lot of work on Siberian shamanism. And there are shamans in Alaska, in rural Mexico. I mean, you can, South America, Peru, definitely. You know, you can find you know, shamans in the Amazon, in every part of the Amazon. So it's not we aren't as aware, perhaps, but I believe it's probably on every continent.
Now, as far as it being referred to by other names, another area of the world, because it's one that I hold a great affinity for, and that's Ireland, and the Celtic traditions, would mm. they fall under that same category, or is that something just a little different, as far as you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I love Celtic shamanism, Celtic work. I really identify with the Druids, and I was just in Ireland. I was in Ireland and Scotland. My son and I went on an ancestry trip to trace our ancestry on my father's side. We were in northern Scotland. It was just like amazing. And we're in Northern Ireland, where our family moved, and it was unbelievable. And there are several authors, like John Matthews. There are many authors who talk about Celtic traditions and ritual and ceremony and trance work definitely can be found in Celtic tradition.
I can't get enough.
I love it too.
We haven't been to Ireland in 11 years, almost 12 now, and can't wait to get back. Don't know when that's going to happen, but anytime I talk with people about it, they say, oh, I would love to go. I says, you just need to go. But
yeah.
don't go for a couple of days, at least a minimum of 2 weeks.
I know.
Be there for 2 weeks. Now, we went in 2002, 2003 at the transition of the new year. We actually flew out on the 23rd of December, and it was a wonderful time. And when we went back again in 2004, late January, when we landed and we got into our rental car, it felt like we were picking up right where we left off. Oh, it's week three of a month-long stay.
Wow.
It was great. And the people that we met and the experiences that we had, the places that we went, and just being there. And I tell you, when we left for the first journey, I said, I'm not going back. Well, of course I did. And then I said, okay, we're going the second time. I'm not coming back.
No, see, you felt at home there, didn't you?
Very much. Very much so.
Me too. You know, tying this to the shamanic work, it would be fun for you probably, Richard, as you read my book, is to do an ancestry journey.
Yeah.
And I know I did an ancestry journey and found myself on the shores of this island. And there was a castle on the island, and it felt like Scotland to me. That's what I felt in the shamanic journey. And all of these ancestors, the ancestor spirits, came and greeted me and welcomed me home. It was very moving.
Yeah.
And then I found myself up in this castle, and I had a crown on my head, and I was out on this balcony The ocean was there. There were all these people, all these spirits kind of welcoming me home to my heritage. And it was an incredible shamanic journey. So that would be, if you don't do any others, that would be a really cool one for you to do.
Yeah. Well, like I said, if I go again, I am not coming back this third time. I'm just not.
Well, you could either stay there or you could do shamanic work and always be there.
Oh, absolutely. I know that I have some, I know of some people who live in Ireland, and I'm sure that I could stay there, and I'm certainly willing to pull my own weight unofficially and under the table, so to speak. Because the immigration rules or laws that they have there are ones that, you know, I would love to go through that process. But nonetheless, it's one of the things that I think that, you know, not everybody is drawn to the same spot on the planet. And I often think about this in terms of, for example, this was brought out, for example, in the Law of Attraction and The Secret and so forth. And people have talked about this many times. And not everybody wants the same things. It's not like, okay, everybody wants, all 7.5 billion, nearly 8 billion people want this one thing.
No.
And there aren't enough of that. There aren't 8 billion of those things.
No.
It doesn't work that way. And then there's the other aspect of it, too, is what is for your highest good? What is in your best interest? And I think
That's
that
right.
The universe takes that into consideration. And when you tap into the spirit realm, mm-hmm. you get that kind of guidance, don't you?
Oh, it's amazing. That's why the subtitle is How to Find Guidance and Healing in the Spirit Realms, because what you bring back is wisdom. And they will, your guides, teachers, spirit allies, departed loved ones, ancestors, they'll never tell you what to do because you have your own free will. They will suggest, or they will show you a picture, or they will turn it around like a good therapist. They'll turn it around and say, well, what is it that you truly want in your heart of hearts? What is it that is your soul's calling? They'll often turn it around, and they almost always say, we love you and we think you're doing great. I mean, there's nothing better than it's like cheerleaders. It's like you have this group of people. I mean, I've done a journey and gone to my personal place of power in the middle world, and they're having a party for me. There are Japanese lanterns. They are cheering. They have little noisemakers. It's precious. It's just amazing. And some shamanic teachers believe that these beings have been assigned to us, that these beings are there for us and want our best and, like you said, our highest good. And it's amazing because I feel so loved and come back here after the journey and have more confidence, more strength, feel more empowered to do the work that I need to do here, even though at times I get weary. It's a way to feel like you have support here, like you have your family. I have my family here, but I have people there, beings there, guides, teachers. I have these allies in the spirit world who are cheering me on, who want my best, who want me to do the work I'm supposed to be doing here. And they're like they're coaching me.
Mm-hmm.
They're like coaches.
Yeah.
You know, we believe in you. Now, you know, go do it. In fact, I had a journey that I've never seen him before, but I had one journey where I met Gandhi. Gandhi was up on this mountain and I couldn't see him from the distance, and I got closer and I climbed up on the mountain. It was Gandhi. And it was right after my book was turned into the publisher, Red Wheel Wiser, turned in. I was so tired. I was like just lying around, you know, eating popcorn and watching sitcoms practically. And Gandhi said, enough time off. We need you so much. We need you to be doing this work. You know, don't take so much time off. We know you need a break, but, you know, here's what you've been doing. We need you to keep doing it. Then I looked up and there were all these beings behind him, like full of light, this whole light filled army of beings behind him. And I got more energy. It was like, I went, okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can do it. Yeah, I've had some time off, I need to get back to work. And that's what he said to me. He says, time to get back to work. And smiled at me and sent me on my way. But it's like you have these beings that just love you and are helping you do what it is that you need to do here to help humanity and the planet.
I find it just extraordinary, miraculous, incredible, and inspiring too that you and others, so many others, are doing this kind of work. They're doing what they can, but I think one of the keys that has to be remembered is that we as individuals have to do our work first, in a real way, in order for us to help others. It's like that a first rule of survival.
That's right.
Take care of number one, because if you don't take care of number one, you can't help two and beyond.
No, you have to put your mask on first on the airplane. You know, I love that you're bringing this up. Well, two things. One, everybody has their own work that they're to do here, and it's not going to look like mine. It's not going to look like yours. It's going to be theirs. And it's not about, because for a while in my life, I thought, oh my God, I need to be like Oprah. Or I need to, you know, be Jack Canfield, or I need to, you know, be this person or that person. No, it's not about being famous. It's not about doing that work. That's their work. I need to do whatever I'm called to do here. And I love that there are great mothers and fathers on this planet. And that's the work that they're called to do. And there could be no better work than raising a child to go out into the world and be this incredible human. And so whatever your calling is, it doesn't matter what it is. You feel called to do it. You feel it inside your heart. It's what, you know, you love it. You have a passion for it. Then you do it. You know, I think that's really important to say. And what you shared, that we've got to do the work on ourselves. Mm. We can't just go out there and, well, plus it's really inauthentic, isn't it? It's like not honest.
Yeah.
If we're out there, you know, being this person in the world and we're smiling and we're acting like we're this person and then we're screaming and yelling at people backstage or we're, we're hypocrites and we're gossiping and we're mean-spirited. That's horrible. And I have heard stories like that, that there's some people out there that I won't mention names, but that they're fairly famous, but they're not nice people. They're not kind to the people around them. And so we need to do that work. We need to get rid of whatever it is that's festering in there, that's unresolved from our past, that is keeping us, that's keeping us from being our highest. And we need to do that individual work and then model through our actions, model out there for others who we truly are in an authentic way.
Yeah, I have to say that there have only been a few people that I have wanted to have on this program whom I put forth the initial request.
Yeah.
And there was such a layer of the gauntlet that I had to go through, I just basically said, no, it's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. And these were fairly notable people. And I thought, well, you know what? They're already notable. They don't need my help, which is not my purpose, granted. But, you know, I want to talk with those who are maybe on their way up or who are not interested in going up. They're just interested in going out and putting out this information for people so that others can move forward in their lives. They can free themselves. They can heal themselves. They can get the guidance that they need that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I just said, you know, maybe one day they'll come to me if I ever reach that, you know, status. And it doesn't matter whether I do or not, because what I'm doing right now is quite gratifying and so forth. So
you're doing a great job. I really am enjoying your show very much.
Well, I appreciate that. I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us from the work that you're doing, both from the book, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, the subtitle, How to Find Guidance and Healing in the Spirit Realm, as well as your Empowered Healing and all of the other work that you're doing. And again, the website for those who would like to get more information is drsusan.com. drsusanallison.com. That's drsusanallison.com. Before I let you go, though, I have three final questions for you.
Of course.
Who is Susan Allison?
Well, she is a person, and I'll just stop the she and just say, you know, I'm here to fulfill my own soul's purpose, and one of my purposes was to write this book. I've been writing it in a way inside me for over 20 years, and my goal is to help people overcome the fear of death and know that their loved ones are fine, that their departed loved ones are happy and well, and that's my soul's purpose. So that's who I am, and I'm a very authentic person, and I am living who I am in the world, and it's very important to me to be doing that.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to empower people, and I don't want to be anyone's healer, anyone's guru, anyone's shaman. And I think in our country, we tend to give away our power way too much. And so all my books, you know, my book Conscious Divorce, my book Empowered Healer, and now this book, You Don't Have to Die to Go to Heaven, it's about my sharing everything I know with the reader and saying, now you do it. You empower yourself. You have an amicable, peaceful divorce, and stay friends with your ex and do that modeling for your children. You heal yourself using four tools that I have in Empowered Healer. You can do it yourself. And you can journey to spirit realms and bring back guidance and healing on your own with my guidance and with my coaching. But my goal is to empower readers, clients, and everyone I can on the planet to know that you can do it yourself.
And who inspires you?
Lots of people inspire me. And I have to say that Marianne Williamson has been someone who has been such an inspiration to me. I've read all her books. I've listened to her. I see how she leads her life. She does workshops and events for free for people in Los Angeles. She's such a role model for me. I love her. And there are a lot of other people that I love, and some of them living, some of them not living. And of course, all the avatars, Lao Tzu, the Tao Te Ching, so many books, so many writers, so many beings that are dear to me. And that could be a show on its own, Richard.
Mm. I want to thank you again for joining us and extend to you the invitation that should you find yourself here in the Santa Barbara area, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, I am going to be in Santa Barbara. I will contact you and let you know when.
Please. That would be wonderful. We always love to have, whether it's Skype or the phone, we'll do those interviews. We love doing those as well. But when we have people in face-to-face, it is really, the energy is so much different. And so, yes, we look forward to that. And again, thank you so much for talking with us and taking so much time.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.